Who do you think, like, right now would be the guy that you'd kind of attach yourself to if you were to start collecting their stuff?
I don't know if that person exists. Well, if you're talking, like, really invest, really believe in their trajectory, I think it almost certainly has to be an American. So I would go Scheffler if I had an answer.
You know, if you fast forward 50 years from now, right, like, what are some of the things that, you know, people will buy today, you know, if they keep it for 50 years, might be worth something on your auction? And
I think the sure bet is always with the tried and true Masters Tournament is king. Anything rare that's Masters Tournament related. And then Tiger Woods.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right, Mr. Ryan Carey, thank you for joining the podcast today, the Member Guest Podcast, talking about all things golf, collectibles, and golden age auctions. So I obviously was talking with our mutual friend, Ben Schaap, for this, and I was doing some reading on you guys. And so that I don't butcher it. So you founded what used to be Green Jacket Auctions, which is now Golden Age Auctions. And is that all that you do, is the golf auction business?
Yeah. So I was in law school at the time and started Green Jacket Auctions, the kind of predecessor company, if you will. And just started like a little side gig, buy and sell golf collectibles. I love golf history, golf collecting, saw a need for it. It was a business, but it was more of a side hustle type thing. And here we are 17 years later. I'm not practicing law. I'm doing this and owning an auction house, an online marketplace.
And I actually, so not with golf, but, you know, was really big during kind of the COVID craze. It seemed like collectibles and auctions for like everything, especially sports cards and Pokemon cards, are kind of taking off. How have you seen it evolve over the last 17 years, right? And how much has... You know, obviously, golf's taken off over the last, call it, 3 to 5 years, it feels like. Has that changed a lot for you all's business? Has it been a steady growth? Does it kind of come and go with players and collectibles? Or I guess, what's the industry like before we even talk about anything?
Yeah, I mean, it started off as like total niche, right? So total people that like golf history the most, people that like collecting the most, tiny little niche, you know, not like baseball cards or some of the bigger things. And there was no really big precedent for us. You know, golf cards weren't a big thing. Golf collecting wasn't that big a thing. And so for a while, it was a steady growth. Tiger Woods obviously, you know, changed all that when people started collecting Tiger, anything Tiger related, Tiger autographs, all that stuff. So that kind of changed things first. And then COVID just really blew the top off things. So you've probably seen headlines of whether it's a Michael Jordan jersey or a Mickey Mantle card or even comic books or classic cars like Ferraris and things like that. They all just skyrocketed in value. It's kind of surprising that COVID did that, but it did. It made all these sports collectibles, you know, they were already starting to be seen as like an asset class to a certain extent. That was like starting to happen. And we were all thinking, oh, in 5 years or 10 years, this will be, you know, a legitimate alternative asset. And then COVID just made that what I thought was going to be, you know, 5 years or 10 years down the road. It made it happen in a matter of months. And so it really accelerated the industry there.
So for you guys that are in the industry, what's the thesis on why COVID made just collectibles in general take off? Was it one, because people had a lot more free time on their hands? Was it two, like the nostalgia? Or was it three, like people didn't really have, or they had more money that they weren't spending on, you know, outside hobbies, and they were like, hey, I'm going to go buy some stuff that I love? Or, you know, it's probably a combination of all three, but like, well, what do you guys talk about as to why it took off?
Yeah, it was this perfect storm of, you know, going back to your roots, the nostalgia aspect, the spending money on yourself. Everyone got caught up in the kind of rat race of life and our lives are busy and everything. All of a sudden, you had more time at home. You maybe pulled out your old baseball cards. You watched the Last Dance documentary about Michael Jordan. All that stuff made you, and then you start playing golf more. And so all of that led to wanting to spend more on yourself. Maybe it was that life is fleeting and like, you know, I just want to focus on myself a little bit here and collect. And then there's this weird phenomenon that as sports collectibles go up in value, more people are interested. If, you know, I always tell people if baseball cards were worth 25 cents each, well, the only people that would collect them would be the people that really geek out about baseball cards the most. once they're worth $1 million, then every Wall Street guy, every hedge fund guy is all of a sudden like, wait, tell me about these baseball cards. You know, so it has that kind of phenomenon where as prices go up again, more people get interested. It's not just, you know, the geeky collectors anymore. It's everyone takes notice. It also used to be seen, you know, you would never tell your friends or your spouse or whatever that you want to spend $10,000 or $50,000 on a piece of sports memorabilia a few years ago. Your friends would think you're crazy. They think that's a waste of money. Well, now that we've seen, you know, we've got this, you know, couple decades of appreciation, people can really see it as an alternative asset. Now, I'm not suggesting you like, you know, abandon the stock market and put it all in sports collectibles. But when you feel that your money's safe, then it's kind of cool to own some of this stuff. You're like, you know, I personally, yes, golf is what I do and everything. But I also bought a Michael Jordan rookie card because I think it's awesome. And I think it's probably going to hold its value and it's fun to own. So it's no different than, you know, owning some more Microsoft stock or anything like that. It's just a cool piece. And guess what? My friends are more interested in me showing them that than really anything else I own.
Well, so on the cool pieces, I know you've sold some. Do you personally collect or have you purchased a bunch of stuff? Like, do you have this basement full of just awesome golf and other kind of sports memorabilia?
I do, absolutely. But it's tough, right? It's tough when it's my business because I see all this stuff coming through and you have that natural desire to like, well, I want to own this and everything. So what I try to do is I try to let things go up to auction because otherwise I'd want to keep everything. And that way I feel a sense of ownership when I do sell it. So when I sell something, there is this like, oh, I was in charge of that. I helped facilitate that deal. You know, I had it for a little while. And so that I try to live kind of vicariously through that process. Otherwise, I'd want to own absolutely everything.
So for golf stuff specifically, like my mind always goes to putters. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because that feels like what is the most collected in golf. But like, am I on the right path there with putters being kind of the biggest collectible? I mean, I think of like the Bettinardis, I think of the Scotty Camerons, the Tour Only stuff. I think about a lot of the old Ping stuff. Like, one, is it the putter? And two, when you answer yes, why is it the putter that's like the most coveted golf thing to collect?
It is absolutely the putter. And I don't totally know why. If, you know, you've got a putter and you've got a wedge or you know, an 8-iron, no one wants to collect the 8-iron, right? And some people like wedges. And everybody likes putters. Putters are just a thing. I don't know what it is. And the crazy thing about it is it's arguably the one piece of equipment that you're not going to get that much better by getting the newest technology. Like, there's some advances and everything. You got these lab putters and things like that. But for the most part, buying a Circle T putter is not going to make you make more putts. But it's just cool to own. Putters have always been cool. Players have always tinkered with putters and everything. But putters are absolutely king. And yeah, that's our biggest growth area. And it's the largest number of collections right now. The most number of people are interested in putters, specifically Scotty Cameron's.
Yeah, so that was going to be my follow-up question is, it seems like Scotty Cameron has like a stranglehold on kind of the putter market, if you will. And I mean, I'm a golfer. I've tinkered with like every putter under the sun. And I do know the Scotties feel a little bit different. Like there's just something about a Scotty. But personally, like I find their tour only stuff to be like the coolest line out there. I mean, I have some tour stuff from Bettinardi. I've been to Ping and I've been in their vault. I've seen their stuff. But what is it about the Scotty Cameron stuff that seems to resonate with the most golfers out there? Is it because it's Titleist? Is it because Tiger, made the switch from Ping to Scotty? Or do you have any like opinions on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of Scotty Cameron, the person, the man. And Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods kind of like, you know, was the match that lit it. But Scotty Cameron himself is this creative genius. We've got this one employee, our photographer, Larry, that he's a non-golfer. He loves Scotty Cameron's because he calls them industrial art. And they really are, right? So you can appreciate the beauty of a Scotty Cameron without knowing much about golf. So if you are a golfer and you love, you know, there's a good chance you gravitate towards Scotty Cameron's. He makes these absolutely beautiful putters. Arguably, no one else has really done anything like that with golf clubs. You know, yes, you have other people like Bettinardi and stuff doing that with putters, but Scotty Cameron really started that all. It's interesting because he obviously copied the design from a Ping Answer, but he changed it. He added color, he added different materials, different necks, different weldings and stuff. And it is amazing how everyone's resonated with that. And I think a lot of people at first, we call it the early 2000s, maybe late 90s, they thought that this was like a hype cycle. This was like a fad. because people were paying crazy amounts of money for Scotty Cameron stuff. Well, here we are in 2024, and everyone that thought that, myself included to a certain degree, has been proven wrong. You know, then now we've got 25 or 30 years of people being obsessed with Scotty Camerons, and there are more Scotty Cameron, you know, aficionados and collectors and enthusiasts today than there ever have been.
Yeah, and I find it a little bit fascinating as well, because like you said, you know, like the lab golfs of the world have kind of bursted on this scene, and like technology is changing, but there's a part of like the Scotty that, you know, their typical blade, or like you said, the blueprint they took from the Answer seems to like year over year be very consistent with just like what it is. And I've actually learned a ton from starting this podcast in the golf world. I had no idea that Tiger had actually played an Answer before he went to Scotty. I was in their vault and they had like a replica of Tiger's first like Answers. They have a replica of every putter that they've ever won a tournament with. And then a couple of other things as well, like Bubba's wedge that he hit at Augusta out of the pine straw, stuff like that. But I had no idea that Tiger had even played an Answer before. Like when you think of paying, like you don't think of vintage Tiger. I don't think there's people out there looking for like, you know, that type of model that Tiger used to play, right? Like it truly is about Scotty Cameron at that point.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you may know this, and just for everyone listening, that Tiger still uses the Ping grip on his Scotty Cameron, because when he was an amateur, he used a Ping grip. So Tiger's Ping grip is Sharpied out. So the Ping would normally be in white and you could read it. And he literally takes a Sharpie, and I believe he does it himself, at least that's what I've heard, where he takes a Sharpie and now he gets rid of the logo. But he has always used a Ping grip because that was the grip he had when he was a kid growing up and everything. And when he first switched to Scotty Cameron's, Scotty Cameron didn't have something similar. Now Scotty Cameron does make a rubber grip like that. But Tiger wanted to keep that same Ping grip on there. And so, yeah, that goes back to his Ping roots. People don't talk about it that much, but that was the origins of it.
Yeah, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And I was doing a little research beforehand, you know, in prep for this. I saw that you've sold, I believe, a backup putter of Tiger's, because he's keeping his main one. Obviously, he'll probably never get rid of it. It's not like he needs the money, right? Talk to me a little bit about that. I mean, like, did you hold one of Tiger's backup putters and sell, or what's the story behind this?
Yeah, so the story is, when Scotty Cameron works with Tiger, and that's not consistent. You know, Tiger went to Nike for a little while. He was using TaylorMade putters for a while. But when they're working together, Scotty Cameron, at least historically, would make one, sometimes two backup putters per year for Tiger. Now, he does this for other players too. The phenomenon about Tiger is Tiger never uses the backup. Tiger has stayed with that same trusty gamer every single time he's won, you know, every one of his majors except for the 97 Masters with it. So you're spanning, you know, 99 PGA through 2019 Masters with the exact same putter, that famous red dot putter. So the backups were made so that whenever Tiger needed to call another one into play, maybe he dented it, maybe he wanted to switch putters or whatever, maybe one's a little heavier, a little lighter, whatever else. Every other putter does that. Every other player does that. They have, you know, Scotty Cameron make them extra putters and they swap them out every once in a while. Tiger just famously doesn't do it. So it's kind of the holy grail within Scotty Cameron collecting to find one of those where Scotty Cameron himself will put on the certificate of authenticity that it was made for Tiger Woods. And that's one of the Tiger Woods backups that Tiger maybe rolled a few putts with it, maybe took it out on the putting range, maybe used it as house, maybe just felt it and decided he didn't want it. But either way, Tiger, as far as we know, never put one into play. He only uses that same trusty gamer. There are some rumors that Tiger put, you know, one or two of them in play when one of them, you know, got damaged, when his trusty gamer got damaged, but we've got no proof of that so far. So that's kind of the next mystery, is whether somebody can solve that, whether Tiger or Steve Williams, someone will go on the record and say, okay, yes, this other one over here, I put it in play for a couple of, you know, couple tournament days while they were fixing my gamer. We're still waiting for confirmation on that story, but that would be the next kind of big story that breaks with Tiger's putter.
So now I got to ask, like, obviously all this is public record and out there, but like, what's the backup go for? And then if you had to guess, if Tiger were to sell the main one that's won all those majors, what would that go for? Just guessing.
So the backups are, they go for around $200,000. The highest price one we ever sold was about $393,000. So that's kind of the range for backups. We probably sold four or five of them. And that's, again, that's the Scotty Cameron collecting holy grail right now. If we could prove that Tiger used one of those putters, even just for a round or two on the PGA Tour, I think you're looking at about $1 million putter at that point. Once we can get confirmation on that. And then Tiger's gamer, the famous red dot that he's used for 14, 15 majors. I once valued that a few years ago at $10 million. The way the market shifted and everything, I was way low. You know, it's one of the most expensive pieces of not golf memorabilia, sports memorabilia. You know, there was a Mickey Mantle card that, you know, is valued at $30 or $35 million. Michael Jordan jersey sold for over $10 million. Babe Ruth jersey just sold for, you know, in the 20s. I think it's up there. I think you're looking at a $20, $25 million sale if Tiger ever sells it. So obviously Tiger does not need the money. We've asked him before if he wanted to sell it. He, of course, didn't even let us finish the sentence and says no. But maybe one day he'll sell it for charity or something like that. You know, who knows? It does deserve to be in a museum one day. I think it is going to be the modern golf relic that, you know, in years to come will be even more famous than it is today.
I was going to ask, do you think, like, you know, when he did, I don't know Tiger, but I would guess, like, even when he's done on playing on the PGA Tour at a majors, he's still going to play, right? He's probably going to play at Augusta for, you know, a lot longer than we could even anticipate. But whenever that day comes that he does, you know, quote unquote, hang it up, like, do you, what's your gut tell you? You think that's going to be in a museum in some way, shape, or form one day?
I would like to think so. I'd like to think at some point when he's, you know, getting older, maybe less competitive, I'd like to think that he's going to let the, it could be in the Smithsonian. It's really that special of a piece that it kind of is the modern era of golf. It is Tiger Woods and his, you know, ascension to the, you know, the kind of throne of one of the two best players, possibly the best player of all time, the most talented player of all time. And I'd like to see it in the Smithsonian or something like that at one point. Yes.
Yeah. I got to ask now, because you kind of alluded to, I don't know if it was you directly, but have you spoken with Tiger before?
Yeah. You know, I've spoken with Tiger on occasions and, you know, Tiger's Tiger. He's not all that approachable or easy to get a hold of. But we make attempts when we can.
Yeah, it's still cool, man. That's an awesome experience. And I think I saw too. So I saw, you know, moving off of the putters, you have sold, was it the Tiger Slam irons?
Yeah, that's basically our claim to fame, I guess. This was the COVID bump, just, you know, personified basically. It was this perfect storm where we kind of set off this craze on the high end of sports memorabilia, where, you know, historically, you know, we had never sold an item. No golf item had ever sold for, you know, the record was $682,000. That was us for a green jacket back in 2013. And that was the record for golf. And so we were, you know, searching for that first $1 million item. We were able to get Tiger's, the irons that he used during the Tiger Slam. And those went up for auction. And, you know, I talked with Golf Digest. I told them for an article that I thought they might sell for $1 million. That was a big stretch. That's a big leap, because I didn't know if they really would. And if they only want for 400 grand here, I look like an idiot for like trying to pump up something and it doesn't come close. So, you know, it's kind of hard to do that, but I did believe there's a chance. I didn't know who was going to pay $1 million, but I thought they were worth that. So I went on a limb. A million sounds way better than saying 750 grand. So I said $1 million. It's a better headline. And at auction, they ended up going for $5.15 million. So yeah, so that really made our entire company. It's shown this light on us as well. So obviously it's a good payday, but way more than that, it just changed our entire industry. It changed the course of our company, you know, all that stuff. I mean, the next day, I mean, years over, you know, 100 newspaper and, you know, websites and stuff around the world writing articles about us. It was insane, man. It was a crazy moment.
Well, lucky for you, I waited a few years to reach out. So I waited till the craze kind of settled down to get you on the podcast.
Yeah, that next day, I went into the office 2 days later, and I was trying to get back to as many people as possible. I mean, I'm getting texts from people I went to like sixth grade with and stuff. People seeing on ESPN and things like that. And I flipped through just with Curtis, my partner, and I just flipped through, and I think I had like a few hundred unanswered text messages. It was insane. It was my one moment of like, oh, I see what these guys, when they win their first tournament or something momentous happens in their life where they're just hearing from everybody. That was my one moment on a business level where that happened. And it was really cool. The number of people that, you know, saw it and reached out. It was pretty special.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. Good for you guys. It's good to, you know, and it truly is really cool to see like the sport of golf evolve over the last couple of years, and just how, you know, the sport has so many different, you know, limbs almost that come off of it, right? Like, I never even would have thought about golf memorabilia or auctions, you know, as a business outside of, you know, maybe something that would go to like a Golden or somebody selling something on eBay or whatever it might be. It's just been really cool to see the impact that how the sport has grown. So has stuff like your business, stuff like, you know, podcasts, and even, you know, I got a friend that does, you know, logo designs for, you know, they started out with courses, and now people, when they go on like friends trips, are doing logos for their golf trips, right? Making like head covers and stuff. So it truly is really cool to see how all of it has evolved over the last, I don't know, call it even just 3 years.
Yeah, we used to be a website for people that were identified as golf collectors, right? So golf collectors already know who we are. Now we're starting to get just more mainstream golfers that, you know, are looking for some one or two special things. And I would say a large portion of our clients now don't really identify as golf collectors. They're not golf collectors, but the same way I see a whole bunch of flags behind you, the same thing where in our one of our auctions, we'll have a flag from Augusta National or Cypress Point, or we'll have a, you know, flag from the Masters Tournament autographed by Jack Nicklaus in the center. And, you know, and then, you know, people that travel to play golf, it's like we might sell a wicker basket from Marion or you know, books from club histories of famous golf courses and stuff. And so once people check out our website and kind of see our auctions, they realize, oh, it's not just people that like, you know, geek out on golf collecting. It's just people that love golf. You know, our website, it's got to be one of, we don't track how like sticky it is, how long people spend on it. But when we have an auction going on, you know, what I hear from people, it must be absurd how long people spend on it. It's just fun to go through and read about all the items. If we're selling a Masters trophy or some piece of history, if you like golf, you're probably going to enjoy flipping through our website and reading about those things. And so that's what's really kind of, you know, expanded our customer base is, you know, all these people that, again, they don't identify as golf collectors, but they love golf. And so they do that. The other thing, I gave a speech last year and I mentioned that nobody used to be a golfer, right? Everyone either is a golfer or they're not a golfer. And if you're a golfer, you're probably a golfer for life, you know, barring some injury or whatever else. You don't really like, you know, there'll be ups and downs, right? You know, you might have a kid play a little less that year. You might be doing some of the work, you know, that has time commitment. You might have COVID where now you start playing more often, but a golfer is always a golfer. So because of that, we've got this rare business where, you know, we've got customers for life. If you hear about us or you bid in our auctions, we've got you for life because chances are you're still going to be interested in what we have to sell a year from now, 5 years from now and everything. And then, of course, people get older, maybe their finances get better, they got more discretionary income and stuff. Well, then they just kind of upgrade the item or they get that one special piece that they've always thought was cool but could never afford before. So that's the cool thing about us is, you know, we started the predecessor company, we started 17 years ago, and we've got a few dozen people that participated in that first auction are still our customers 17 years later. I mean, how many businesses can say that, you know?
Yeah, not a lot. You stated that beautifully. I've never heard that before, but like I was going through my mind all the things that I used to do, right? Like, yeah, I used to play football. I'm never putting on the cleats again, right? Like I played baseball when I was a kid and yeah, like I used to play baseball, but I'm probably not stepping in stepping up to the plate anytime soon. But you make a good point about golf. I mean, like at our club and other clubs I've been to, you got guys that are 70, 80, sometimes even close to 90 years old out there playing. So I was a wonderful little note by you. I'm going to start using that one.
Yeah, it's the best. I mean, and that's how our customer base is too. And you'd be surprised. People appreciate and experience golf in different ways. You know, one of the biggest collectors in the world is in Chicago. He's got, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of golf memorabilia. Some of the great pieces, some great relics, the history of the game. And then you ask him where he plays, and he doesn't even belong to a country club near there. You know, he belongs to one near where his vacation house is, but he doesn't belong to Chicago Golf Club or Medina or Oakland, you know, or Olympia Hills, Olympia Fields, any of those. He's just a golf collector and loves golf and plays a fair amount of golf, but he's never thought about joining one of the fancy clubs or anything, despite the fact he obviously has the means to do so. So people just experience golf in different ways.
Yeah. So on the, I guess to your point, like, or more so moving away from Tiger and Scotty Cameron and all these things, you know, you mentioned your website, the auctions. I got to ask, like, you know, aside from the big stuff, what are some of the coolest things that you've ever seen come across? Some of the coolest things that you guys have sold? I saw something about a Warhol painting. I mean, like, talk to me a little bit about some of the the cool stuff that you guys see and sell.
Yeah, the Andy Warhol painting from a few months ago, that was my probably favorite piece, just because I felt like I had no business ever dealing in an Andy Warhol painting. We don't do a lot in artwork. We'll do some, obviously golf art only. And that was the World Golf Hall of Fame's. And we are helping them sell their collection as they have made the transition from their big, huge campus down in St. Augustine, Florida, to Pinehurst now. So they're a much smaller footprint. So they had a lot of extra stuff that wasn't going to make the trip. And so we're helping them. We partner with them to help them, you know, sell the, these you know, valuable relics of the game, if you will. And they were giving us everything except for we were on a Zoom meeting, and they mentioned that and they'll probably talk to Christie's and Sotheby's in New York, big auction houses, about their Andy Warhol painting. And I was like, what Andy Warhol painting? What are you talking about? It's a print? What are you talking? And they're like, no, we have, you know, Andy Warhol original. He did this athlete series and Jack Nicklaus. We have the Jack Nicklaus one. And I was like, okay, what? Just tell me, I need to know more about this. So we finished that Zoom call. We had another follow-up one a few days later. And I couldn't sleep at night. I was like, you know, ask my wife. I was like, oh my, I have to get this Andy Warhol painting. Like, we're going to get an Andy Warhol painting. This is so cool. And so Sotheby's had told them it's worth about $225,000. And I thought that was just stupid low for, it's Andy Warhol. This sounds like, I don't know, you see all these art prices, I think it should be worth a lot more than this. So my pitch to the Hall of Fame was, you should give Christie's and Sotheby's every single Andy Warhol painting, just not this one. Like, this is Jack Nicklaus. This is for all I know, this is the worst Andy Warhol painting of them all. But it'll sell to a golfer. A golfer will want this. Like, it's Jack Nicklaus, and it was awesome. It was like Masters colors. It was green and yellow. It was like Golden Bear yellow, Masters green. And I was like, no, this is going to sell to a golfer. Someone's going to want to put this in their house. This is, you know, this should not go to an Andy Warhol collector. And we put out for auction again. Sotheby's said it was worth about $225,000. And we sold it for like $1.1 million. And so I think I was vindicated in my belief there. Obviously, my consignor to the Hall of Fame was absolutely thrilled, blown away. That blew away everyone's estimates. And it's a good thing we didn't sell the art world. And the best part about it, it went to one of my existing customers that has this fantastic golf collection. And that was it. He's not an Andy Warhol collector. He's a golfer and thought this was awesome and bought it for $1.1 million. And so now it stays within the golf world and everything. And so, yeah, that was one of the coolest things I've ever done, for sure.
Wow. Like you said, I'm personally glad to hear that I went to a golfer and not just, like you said, somebody that's into art or Andy Warhol. Like, knowing that it's in the basement of somebody who has the means to be able to just do that and also love the sport is probably sitting up there with a bunch of other golf collectors. Probably makes everybody sleep a little bit better at night, which is awesome.
Yeah, I had this gallery owner out in California contact me, and he was like obsessed with the condition of the painting for one of his clients, and he wanted to see the edges and whether the paint had rubbed off and everything. And I thought it was the most ridiculous thing, because we're talking about an original painting that Andy Warhol made. Like, stop focusing on the condition. This is a one of a kind. Are you not going to want the Mona Lisa because there's a scratch in the bottom left corner? Like, that's not really the point. You're missing the point. And
it makes it better. It's like Tiger's putter with all the dings and correct. The marks and like it. It's that's the character of it.
Correct. I mean, again, we're talking about stuff. We're talking about the corners, the edges, where like this could have happened in Andy Warhol's studio. Like, this was not like a perfect piece that's supposed to be in perfect condition. Condition does not matter for a unique piece of art. And that just bugged me so much. Thankfully, his client ended up not bidding, and it went to the golfer, like I mentioned.
Yeah, good. Yeah, power to the golfers. So I'd be doing a disservice if I didn't, you know, ask. Obviously, talked about your business. Thank you for sharing all the cool stories. Now I got to ask, like, so how often do you guys do the actual, are they called consignments, or I guess the actual auctions? Are they monthly, quarterly, yearly? You're like, how often are you guys doing them?
Yeah, so we were doing two or three a year. But like I said, the whole COVID boom, we ramped up efforts. We did 7 last year. We'll do 6 this year. But we're going to stay in that kind of 6 to 8 range for the foreseeable future, I think. We like our auctions to be special events. So our auctions, we do have a special one coming up that's only going to have, you know, 75 or so lots. But usually we'll have 500 or so auction lots. Sometimes our most recent one was over 700 lots. And so we'll have $25 items, we'll have $25,000 items. And so we make them special events. Nobody knows what's going to be in the auctions ahead of time. We intentionally don't do a preview. We intentionally don't tell anybody what's coming up. And so that way, when we do have an auction, you know, email blast goes out to everybody, posts on social media, and then our website's just flooded with people checking out, you know, looking through every page to see what they might like and what, you know, touches them, whether maybe they attended this specific tournament with their dad, and here we have an autograph item from that tournament, or a flag from a course that they played on that was their favorite course of all time or whatever, and things like that. Maybe it's a Tiger Woods item, definitely Scotty Cameron putters, obviously super, super popular right now. And so we make a special events. And so more recently, we've been doing themes too, where we'll do one that's more antiques, and then we'll do one that's only Scotty Cameron's. And we did one that's just golf clubs or just modern collectibles. And so we'll mix them up too, which has been fun. That way, if it's something that, you know, if you don't like antiques, then you can skip that auction. But if you love Scotty Cameron's, pay attention to that one. And so we've been doing that more. The Scotty Cameron one's a little interesting because other collecting categories fit certain demographics. Antiques tend to be people that are a little older, love the history of the game, been involved in the game a long time, you know, have that connection to someone like a Sam Snead, Gene Sarazen, old Masters tournament stuff, even older, Bobby Jones, Walter Hagen. Whereas Scotty Cameron's, you really can't peg that demographic at all. You get 20-year-olds in college bidding, and you get 75-year-old that are living, you know, Korea or something bidding. It's absolutely phenomenal how broad the Scotty Cameron kind of collection group is. That surprised me kind of the most about them.
Yeah, it seems like they're worldwide and they're global, and they've got a great call it fan base of collectors that are part of the I'm not a part of it, but can't remember what it's called, where, you know, you get their drops with all the swag that they do and stuff. I got into kind of the tour only stuff for a little bit, and I still always get a little tickled when I see somebody with a Scotty, and then you're like, hey, can I take a look at that? And you look at the bottom, you see the circle T's, and you kind of, you know, it's one of those things, like, if you know, you know, type thing. There's a guy at our club, Rick Kelly. He was on our last podcast. He's got a circle T, and he knows, right? Like, you look at it, he goes, yeah, it's a special one. I got it from a, you know, ex-golfer, Lumpy, Tim Herod, if you know who that is.
Yeah, I saw him at your club.
It's cool.
I saw him at your club when our mutual friend Ben hosted me there once. We hung out and I think got a beer with Lumpy for a little bit. But I use a circle T. And it's one of those things too. I would never be like, look how expensive my putter is. Like, I'm not going to do that. I just like to use it because people expect me to, because we sell all these Scotty Camerons. And, you know, it's every once in a while, yeah, people don't notice it at all. And the people that do are obviously obsessed with the putter. And it usually starts with the caddies. The caddies are usually well-versed in their equipment and they're usually good players, and they notice it first. So a lot of times going to the first tee, they've already scoped out the bag. They've already seen the putter. And they have a lot of questions about it.
Well, so since I can't ask you what's upcoming in the next auction, I do want to ask, like, as a, you know, a golfer and somebody committed to the sport, and like you said, probably going to be a golfer for life. What is something that, like, if you look forward, something that today's golfers that are just now starting to get into it, or maybe starting to collect for themselves, that might be, you know, actually worth something in the future? You know, is it finding that next potential company that could burst onto the scene, like a Lab Golf, and having one of their first ever models? Is it more course related and trying to, like, you know, get on courses and, you know, own some of their stuff that they have? I mean, you know, if you fast forward 50 years from now, right? Like, what are some of the things that, you know, people will buy today that, you know, if they keep it for 50 years, might be worth something on your auction and 2070?
Yeah, I mean, it's a phenomenal question, and it's kind of a nuanced answer where it depends. If you're trying to predict the next trend, that's going to be very hard. It's probably going to be hard for me to do, even, where people are going to get more interested in a certain brand, like you mentioned, or something, or a player, you know, who's the next, you know, superstar that emerges, and are people going to collect him or not? But I think the sure bet is always with the tried and true Masters tournament is king. Anything rare that's Masters tournament related. And then Tiger Woods. I imagine Tiger Woods is going to, you know, people are going to be collecting him for a long, long time. I think we're going to have this nostalgia about Tiger and the Tiger years, especially as he moves to this, you know, they're probably not playing much anymore going forward, at least in a couple few years from now. And maybe, you know, golf has that unique thing with Masters tournament where in theory, we're going to see Tiger at least once a year for like the rest of our lives. And that's pretty special about the Masters. So same thing with Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, where, you know, the legends of the game like that, I can see their stuff they're appreciating for years to come. As, you know, we all get older and we want that one piece on our wall. We want one Tiger piece on our wall, or one, you know, Tiger putter or something like that. I can see that happening for sure.
I don't want to get you dizzy, but I'm going to. Don't go too crazy. This is the one kind of golf memorabilia piece that I do have. Can you see?
Yep.
See that? That's sure, 2019 nice. Masters champion. It's the flag, a couple pictures, and a signed deal by Tiger Woods. I can't remember what site I got it on, but I was just laughing as he said that, because I probably could have answered my own question just looking up at my own wall, yeah, saying like my fiance is going to probably kill me for this, but I think I've cried maybe two times in the last decade. And one of them was when Tiger Woods won the Masters in 2019. And ever since then, like, I purchased that, and that's like a special place in my heart. Like, just seeing that after obviously everything that happened in the past, and, you know, coming back and like winning the Masters, I was just like, I was just flooded with it. And so that's the one kind of expensive piece of memorabilia that I have.
That, that moment, I obviously is the one that most people had a reaction to, because he did fall from grace. Right. And Tiger, we would like a good redemption story. Right. And we're okay as a society with our superstars being a little bit flawed, and to see that comeback, when like that was so against the odds, like that, like, it was absolutely insane that it actually happened. So yeah, from a collecting standpoint, 2019 items are extremely hot. They're hotter right now than they ever were. They were popular right afterwards. They are way more popular now. The prices have gone up 2-3x from even just 3 or 4 years ago for the 2019 stuff. Because again, people like you, they feel that connection to that one moment. And I'm actually happy to say that that's a real Tiger autograph too. I would say 95% of the time people show me stuff, the Tiger autographs are not authentic. But you have a real one.
Oh man, I could have exposed myself there, is what you're saying.
I would have likely not said anything, because I usually don't, unless someone really, really wants to know. I always go back to a good buddy of mine from high school. He was in my wedding, and he was at a charity event, and he sent me a text, and he said, like, you know, what are your thoughts? And it was a Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, and Gary Player signed flag. And I just immediately replied, and I said, that thing's fake. And, or in fact, I think I waited a few hours. I think I saw the text or maybe the next morning, and I was like, no, it's not real, man. And he goes, oh, I paid like $3,300 at a charity auction last night for it. And I've always regretted that, because I wish I had asked him more context. I didn't know he was like actively bidding on or anything. I thought he was just showing me something that like his friend had or whatever. And you know, because it's that whole, you know, Ellis said the Schrodinger's cat thing, where like by telling your neighbor that like you found their dead cat, well, you killed their cat, right? Like they blame me. I'm the one that delivered that message. And so they always associate me with giving them that negative news. And so it's so tough, because we get emails every single day, and there's, you know, a lot of fake autographs out there. It's gotten way better. People are getting more knowledgeable about it. There's a lot of fake autographs out there, especially if you bought anything, you know, 10, 20 years ago. And it's tough to tell people that. And I have to do it every single day. I have to tell somebody that they've got something that's not valuable. And while it was hanging on their wall, while it was proudly hanging on their wall, they got to tell everyone it was Tiger's. They felt good about it. It reminded them of a certain moment. And I've got to be the one to tell them that whole time it was fake.
Well, I'm elated now that since I've lost the certificate of authenticity, that I just have your verbal authenticity, Mr. Ryan Carey. Yep. If I ever need to prove to somebody that is correct, I can just FaceTime you real quick and you'll get the thumbs up. That makes
me
feel
sir.
Good.
Yes, sir. Yes. Don't worry about that one.
Yeah. So to wrap up, again, thank you so much for coming on. And hopefully I'm going to start checking out the auctions. I want to ask you, if you had to pick a horse to ride for the next, I don't know, 20 years, and somebody were to start collecting, trying to find the next Tiger Woods, you know, I probably the best example would be, like, nobody ever thought that Tom Brady's could be surpassed. And I still don't think so, because he actually beat this guy in the Super Bowl a few years ago, Mr. Patrick Mahomes. But I think a lot of people out there would make the argument that, you know, Patrick Mahomes stuff 10, 15 years from now, if he goes on to win 6 or 7, whatever he could do, you know, his stuff could be as valuable as Brady, I would always say, well, they played and Brady won, so good luck with that. But if you had to choose a horse, you know, I think people would say Scotty. My personal guy would be Bryson, just for the way that he changed the game. Who do you think, like, right now would be the guy that you'd kind of attach yourself to if you were to start collecting their stuff?
I don't know if that person exists because...
Wow, that's also a valid answer.
Well, if you're talking like really invest, really believe in their trajectory, I think it almost certainly has to be an American to get the most kind of bang for your buck. There were a few people that kind of transcended that. Seve for a little while before our time. And then Rory, of course, had his shot, just hasn't quite won enough. But that one, even American people really, really rallied around. And then Scheffler, of course, stats-wise, if you look at to have the best Wikipedia page, yes, of course him. But are people going to be collecting him to the level? Is he going to show us the personality? Are we gonna, you know, be able to we all like him. He's a likable guy, but are we going to collect him? Are we going to, I don't know. He'd have to win a lot and he'd have to show us some intense moments. And I hope he does not have the lows of Tiger Woods' career, but we need to see him, go through some adversity and kind of get the crowd around him. So I would go Scheffler if I had an answer, but I don't have anybody that I really believe in that we have that next person to kind of take over that mantle for Tiger. He is the closest we had. You know, Jordan Spieth came oh so close. That was going to be the answer. That was the next person, that 2015 year. And then even a couple of years after that, I mean, he was the answer, right? And that didn't happen. And so that's going to happen so many times. There might not be another Tiger Woods, or maybe we'll be 40 or 50 years, just like it, you know, took from Bobby Jones to Ben Hogan to Jack Nicklaus and who's next. It'll happen. We just don't know when. And I don't know. We have that person yet.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, it's not like it's a topic I've sat down and thought a lot about, but I do think the interesting thing about golf compared to other sports is that, like, the timing and the window that you have with the competitiveness of the fields, and now with the sport getting that much more popular and people starting to play golf instead of other sports, I just think it's going to be that much more difficult for somebody to win that much and have, you know, that many moments, especially when you start to think about, like, in my opinion, you know, a guy that does that, they're probably not going to win as many tournaments as Tiger did. But I think what could set them apart is those really big moments in, say, like a President's Cup or a Ryder Cup. You know, if somebody were to make that final putt or, like, come down that stretch and play out of their mind, coupled with a bunch of wins on tour and coupled with a bunch of majors, they could get there. But it's fascinating to me how hard the sport is coming for somebody to rise, you know, to the top of the sport like Tiger once did. And I don't necessarily disagree with you. I just think that with how young Bryson is and how much he's, like, changed the game, right, with, like, his equipment and the way that he's very analytical about it and all those things, I think it's going to be somebody like that almost changes the game a little bit. I think of Steph Curry in basketball, you know, like, coming out, just becoming that three-point shooter that's able to win games in the big moments. And I think it's going to end up being somebody like that. I just think there's going to be another Bryson-esque person that finds a way to get that little edge over the field, and that will set them over the top. And then, to your point, we'll see if they can, you know, win as much as that guy Tiger did and have that personality in those big moments. So,
yeah,
I'm sure it's something fun to think about.
I think that social media will play a big part of that. So Bryson is really only one really that has made kind of inroads in that social media, like almost like hype cycle, where you're getting people to follow you. Golf tournaments are admittedly slow, can be boring at times. Not every tournament is going to have, like, this dynamic finish or the winner that you want or anything. There'll be a bunch of players you've never heard of playing. So it's, you know, if we're going to cater to this social media age, and I don't mean that in, like, dumbing it down way, I meant just creating excitement, is we're going to have to, you know, be social media savvy. And the next big star is going to be that. Like, imagine if social media was as it is now when Ricky Fowler was coming out. I would imagine he would have embraced it more than anybody else and been on TikTok and all this stuff, and he would have been a mega star. Now you got to win along with it and everything too. And Bryce is the only person we have that's really trying that to that degree, or at least having success in it. And we will get a star, I think, in the next 5 years or 10 years that is going to brace that. And that will get so many eyeballs on golf, where, you know, golf is fun. But to a lot of people that just kind of casually turn on a tournament, probably doesn't seem that way, because we all can agree, I think, that the PGA product was maybe a little bit stale, which is why LIV happened and things like that. So what's next? What's next for golf? And are we going to see some star moments out of that? I mean, basketball does it so phenomenally with highlights and stuff, where I really don't care what Ja Morant's or Ant-Man's stats are for the entire year or whatever. I'm going to get a lot of texts when they have some sick dunk in a game or some great moments, even if they don't win the NBA championship. And golf needs more of that, and I think we'll get there pretty soon.
Yeah, 100%. I think you're right. And you know, I'm excited to follow along with it, and hopefully we get some of those cool moments that end up as plaques, like my Tiger one or whatever, on your site. We can see them for the next years to come. So I, again, truly appreciate you coming on, Ryan. Hopefully next time you're up here, I can join the foursome, or if Ben's ever going out your way or down south or whatever it may be, would love to tag along. I can tell we get along well, so I appreciate you coming on the pod.
Sounds great, man. Let's do it. Let's play some time.
Awesome. Thank you, Ryan.
I did. See you.